Would you like to accelerate your career and reach your full potential in just minutes a day? Welcome to the LeadX Show with New York Times bestselling author and Inc. 500 entrepreneur, Kevin Cruz.
Today, we're going to talk about two of my favorite topics, time and money. Hello, everyone. Kevin Cruz here. Welcome to the LeadX Show, where we help you to stand out and get ahead in your career. And in just a minute, we're going to talk about how our beliefs about time and money might be stopping us from living a meaningful life. But first, friendly reminder, you can get more of LeadX every single day by following us on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter. Just go to your favorite social media platform and search for LeadX Life. That's one word, LeadXLife, LeadX Life. And do me a favor, ask me your hardest question. Go to leadx.org/askkevin and ask me anything, leadership, productivity, entrepreneurship, whatever you like. And when you go to that page, you'll see a little button. You click it and you just speak your question out loud. Don't even have to type it. And the microphone on your phone or on your laptop is going to record your question and it automatically sends it to me. If I read your question on the air, I'll send you a cool LeadX t-shirt or maybe a mug or some other swag. So go to leadx.org/askkevin. Your career tip of the day. Ask smarter questions. Dale Carnegie wrote in his all-time best-selling book, How to Win Friends and Influence People, effective leaders ask questions instead of giving orders. Encourage development and engagement with smart questions. For example, instead of dictating how a job should be done, you know, ask your team member, what do you think we should do? What do you suggest we do to get the best results? Instead of asking something like, why are you behind on this project? Start by asking, how do you feel about this project's timeline? How do you feel this project is going right now? And create space for discussion. Instead of asking, you know, yes, no questions like, hey, do you agree? Or does anybody disagree? You know, that is pressure to say, no, no way, boss, I don't disagree. Instead, ask a more open-ended question like, what do you think about this decision? What do you think are the pros and cons, you know, with this decision? Ask smart questions. Our guest today has a PhD in human and organizational systems. She's an author, business strategist, workforce expert, professional speaker, and former radio host of Work Smart Live. She empowers business leaders and entrepreneurs to maximize performance, improve employee engagement, and to increase bottom line results. Her new book is The Pursuit of Time and Money. Step into radical abundance and discover the secret to a meaningful, prosperous life. Our guest is Dr. Sharon Spano. Sharon, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Kevin. It's a pleasure to be here today.
Hey, these are two of my favorite topics, time and money. So I'm excited to dive in. But I always start by asking our guests to tell us a story. And I'm hoping you'll tell us a story about a time when you actually failed at something, maybe early in your career, because we want to learn from your failure. We want to know the lessons learned.
Well, it's a great question. And let me preface it by saying, Kevin, that in my own mind, I don't know if this is healthy or magical thinking. I never really think of things as a failure. I really think of them as really a step forward, an opportunity to learn. And of course, sometimes when you're in the midst of it, it feels very painful and you don't necessarily see the lesson right in the moment. But the most recent that I could think of, and I'm sure there's stuff every day that I just kind of buzz past, but I'd say 10 years or so ago, it was a poor judgment call, I would say, where I hired someone into my business who I had a lot of high hopes for, who was very, very smart, very intelligent, and I wasn't unable for a variety of reasons to get the guy to produce the results that I had hoped for. And actually, that was part of what spearheaded the book on time and money, because we were at a conference one day, and I just in a moment of frustration, I asked the question, and I'm kind of famous for this little scenario now because it ties into the book so well, what do you believe about people who have money? And I'm not even sure why I was prompted to ask the question, but his response really pretty knocked me cold in that he said, I believe people who have money are greedy, oppressive, and egocentric. And it was in that moment that I realized, well, no wonder I can't get him to produce results. I put a lot of time, energy, and money in him, and he hadn't really produced the results, as I stated earlier. So I realized, you know, why would he want to be like those guys if he had that paradigm around people who had money? And it was really kind of the unraveling of the relationship for us. And of course, I transitioned him out. But it was a great learning experience for me, and that I realized that sometimes people have very different paradigms and even values around what you're trying to do in your business, and that I needed to be more discerning. I think I had got caught up in thinking that I could kind of rescue or give this gentleman an opportunity that really he himself was not really wanting. I mean, he had a history of stops and starts and failures, and it began my journey into scarcity perspectives. And, you know, I'm sure every business owner can say, you know, has a similar story where you hire someone and it doesn't quite work out for a variety of reasons. But I don't think he's much different than many of us. We have moments of scarcity. I mean, his was more a life pattern. But in my career and my business, I work with a lot of leaders who are often, you know, business leaders and entrepreneurs who are smack in the middle of some kind of a personal or professional dilemma, challenge, or transition. And when we get into those corners, I find that, you know, we can slip into scarcity perspectives and kind of sometimes get stuck there longer than we even intended.
Wow, Sharon, there's so much good stuff there. And, you know, it's amazing. I've over the years, you know, have read a lot of books and talked to people who address this issue of, you know, limiting beliefs around money and wealth. And it's such a foreign concept to me, because early on when I didn't have any money, and more recently, fortunately, when I have some money, you know, I've never thought negatively about someone based on the amount of money they did or didn't have. And for a long time, I used to think like, well, that's silly. Like, who would think some bad thing about people just because they have money? Well, now that I'm, you know, I've been on this planet for a few more years, I have encountered that. And I'm always shocked when someone like that former employee talks about, you know, the first thing they come to mind is, you know, greedy and egocentric. And this is a perfect tie into your book, because you talk about scarcity perspectives, you know, limiting beliefs. And when I was in my 20s, early 30s, I didn't really relate to this kind of material or help. I thought, that's all mumbo jumbo and psych stuff. Doesn't apply to me. I got it all figured out. And now, you know, every year that goes on, I'm more and more focused on the psychology of success, the psychology of happiness, and understanding that, wow, I was so buried. I couldn't even acknowledge that I had limiting beliefs, let alone begin to identify them. So I've come a long way myself on this. And again, you know, your book is called The Pursuit of Time and Money, Step into Radical Abundance and Discover the Secret to a Meaningful, Prosperous Life. So let me turn it back over to you. Like, what's the big idea? What's the big premise of the book?
Well, there are many, I mean, there are several, but I would say that really what I'm trying to do, Kevin, is just start a conversation, because one of the things that I teach and believe is that with the first moment of awareness comes the opportunity for change. And so to your point, you know, when we're younger, many of us think our thoughts are facts, you know, and we don't have the awareness to realize that we create our own meaning. And when we shift meaning and adopt broader perspectives, you know, that's where we grow and develop into higher levels of not only consciousness, but performance and fulfillment and, you know, that whole meaningful experience of life that I'm alluding to. So kind of the premise is, you know, I'm asking people to examine their early childhood stories, because that's where we develop our earliest paradigms. And then the work is, I'm looking at it through the lens of adult development. That's where what my field is. What we know from the research is that there are 12 stages of development, as we call them. And within those stages are 26 lines of development. So you, for instance, might be at an earlier stage of development, and maybe your lines are, you know, fairly significantly developed, maybe your emotional intelligence or your cognitive capacity, but maybe your moral is a little bit lower than it needs to be, or your interpersonal skills are lower than they need to be. All of these things combined with personality create what I like to call our meaning-making systems. And that's really just the lens that we look at life through. And if you think of it as kind of a mountaintop, you know, and there's 12 base camps on this whole mountain, you're going to have a broader, more experienced, robust experience of life or perception of life, I should say, if you're up on the summit on a clear day, imagine that, versus being at the base camp where you can only see basically what's around you in that immediate moment. So it's not quite a hierarchy in that way when we talk about development, but it's a good way to kind of get a visual. And yet you can have a very robust experience of life no matter what stage of development you're at. But my contention is that often because time and money, the book isn't really about management of time and money, again, so much as it is about examining your paradigms around it, because those two resources impact us every day. I mean, in a zillion ways, we're making choices and decisions all day. And some of them are at a subconscious level based on these stories and narratives that we carry and the hidden dynamics within our family systems and even our work environment systems and all that. So it's really an opportunity to just explore where you are. In the book, we've got practices that I've developed to help people go deeper into those internal dialogues so that they can determine where they fall on the spectrum between scarcity and abundance, and if in fact there's any need for change or improvement in specific areas.
So, you know, your book is packed, again, with the exercises, the important and, you know, can be fun work of really understanding yourself better and to get to a more empowering place. It's hard to, in a short format podcast, to really do it justice. But let's take time instead of money. So I've done a lot of research and, you know, productivity, and wrote a book on some of my findings around habits of productive people. Very practical, not at all psychological or at a deeper level. And again, it's hard without going through the work, but can you share, like, what would be a new perspective on time that we should be striving for, that ideally we would get to?
Well, that's a great question, because again, I'm not getting into time management so much. And first, let me back up, Kevin, and say that I'm looking at the two of them as very, very closely related, because, you know, we flippantly say time is money, but in reality, I mean, the two of them really impact us in the way that I alluded to earlier, and very direct and concrete as well as abstract ways. So when we're looking at time, you know, it's perception. You know, many of us feel, because of the influx of technology and all the amazing benefits of that, that we're being chased 24/7. But you'll find, for instance, in the assessment, I have a free assessment on the website called the Time Money Inventory that we developed a couple of years ago. We've been gathering data on that, and it's anonymous. I welcome your listeners to go on and take it. And one of the things that we are seeing that is really fascinating around the issue of time and or money is the scarcity is fairly, well, obvious to me. I didn't expect any big news there. And the abundance is fairly obvious. What's exciting is the moderate scarcity and moderate abundance categories, because they often look alike. And by that, I mean, often the individual who's falling in the category of moderate scarcity is doing so for all the right reasons and because they believe themselves to be responsible. So in response to your question, for example, around time, it could be the individual who is so rigidly scheduled every moment of their workday that they're not able to handle things that come up unexpectedly. They're not able to relax and enjoy, you know, recreational moments with the people they love in their life. They're so focused, for instance, on planning for the far out future. And then that's where the money comes in. And I've seen this more times than I care to think about, where the individual is so focused on saving for this unpredictable future that they're not even enjoying the trip along the way. And literally, I had someone here in Orlando where I live who would not take his children to Disney World when it's right here, because he was, quote, saving for retirement. And so there's a lot of people always say to me, Sharon, what do you mean by scarcity? There's a lot to unpack there. But it's the simplest way to think about it is, if I'm making fear-based decisions of any nature, it's often grounded in some form of scarcity thinking or perspectives that are limiting my capacity to move forward in ways that produce what I call radical abundance and prosperity.
Okay, that is helpful. And I want a free session here. So here's, let's take myself. So one of the things, you know, I sort of think that, well, I guess there's some authors out there that will just write something they think will make the money. But, you know, you and I, we choose our books based on things we're deeply interested in, we're passionate about, we want to understand and share. So no, it's not an accident that I wrote a book about time and productivity, because for a long time, I think and I feel a lot about time. And if I think back to where it comes from, it's a variety of places. I mean, I've seen more people than I'd like to have, you know, died very young. And suddenly I kind of have this sense of how short life is for everybody, but can really be for some. I've seen people, as you say, you know, say they're going to, you know, go to Europe when they retire or whatever it is, and they never make it there. There's a lot of things about time that have driven me to sort of explore it. And one of the things I tell people is I'm very big on the number 1440. There's 1,440 minutes in the day. And I'm looking at, as we're doing this interview, I've got a 1440 sticker on the bottom of my monitor as a reminder, you know, tick, tick, tick. You never get it back. Now, my question, but I'm going to have a two-parter. So I'm wondering, are you sitting there thinking like, oh boy, Kevin is really off his rocker with this time scarcity? Literally, there's, you know, we never get it back. There's only so much. There's 1440. He should move up the mountain as quickly as he can. Or is it more like, well, yeah, there's 1440 and it's about what my life experience. So for me, the reality is part of this 1440 mindset is saying, I need to be very clear on my values. So my number one value is relationships, primarily my children. So every day I'm reminding myself, like, how am I spending my minutes today with my children, deepening my relationships with friends and family members? Now, a close other value is work and career. So I'm thinking, okay, how am I going to allocate my 1440 towards career today? I'm just mindfully thinking about my values and then, you know, divvying up the 1440. So what runs through your mind? I mean, do you say, wow, Kevin, you really don't have an abundance mindset because you see it as finite? Or, well, yeah, it's finite. It's more about whether you're running scared every day and not playing with your children because you don't think you have the time.
Well, I think, you know, again, I don't know, and I want to answer that. Before I do, let me say that I don't know that it's hard and fast. We are complex beings, and nothing is ever hard and fast. So that's why I'm saying let's just have the conversation and explore the questions, because each of us will have a different answer depending on the circumstances in our life. So to your question, what I would say and what rises up for me as I listen to you, I would say, just without even any further analysis or assessments, my guess is you're an entrepreneur who is in what we call the achiever stage. That's where a lot of entrepreneurs fall. And in fact, the expert and achiever two stages, those are two different stages, is where 60% of the U.S. workforce falls as we know it today based on the research. So often, you know, the achiever is going to be more conscious of all that they're doing, and am I maximizing all of my resources to the best of my ability, because you have a lot on your plate. What I would say makes me think that it's more an abundant perspective than scarcity, and again, only you would know that, is because you're coming from a place of stewardship. And so you're looking at it through the eyes of these are the resources that I have, and how can I use them wisely? But what really triggers abundance for me is what you said about it's linked. The time is not, even though you're looking at it maybe in a very concrete way, you're looking at it in conjunction with your values. And so, you know, the book, when I get to the last chapter, I'm really, which, you know, when I started, I thought, boy, this is a big leap, Sharon. How are you going to make this leap? But I'm really saying, how do you use these resources, and how do you use them to indicate to the people you love most and value most, whether it's employee or my wife and children, that they matter? because there are signals in terms of how we invest time and money to those around us as to where they fall in the pecking order, if you will. And I see that a lot in my business. I've actually realized in myself, for instance, that I came from a divorced, you know, family, and I often tell the story that my dad, you know, took us and dropped us off at my grandmother's, and that was the end of his responsibility. And my parents weren't around. And so the message that I received as a child was, and I didn't even know it actually, Kevin, until I wrote the book, was, you know, my parents didn't invest time or money in me. And so then how valuable am I? You know, if you're not valuable to the two most important people in your world, how valuable are you? So I had a lot of worthiness issues as a young woman that fortunately, you know, I met a great guy that was you know, all about abundance and has invested time and money in me for a lot of years. And I was able to get past all of that worthiness stuff. But, you know, it can pop up. You know, again, those early childhood stories pop up for us whenever we move into a new venture or a new direction in life. So it's there for me, and I'm very, very conscious of it, and I see it a lot with my clients. So as for you, it sounds to me like the 1440 is just a trigger, if you will, to help remind yourself that I need to be a steward of my resources and make sure that I'm handling, you know, all of this in relation to what really, really matters to me to the best of my ability. And to me, that is prosperity.
Well, I feel prosperous, and I just have to add, it hasn't always been this way. And you know, I've shared in other forums that, you know, it was really because of my failure, like in my 20s, through seeing, you know, my mother pass away at a young age, my father's company went bankrupt and things like that. You mentioned that achievement orientation. So I was fixated on, you know, hitting a certain wealth goal by age 30, and it was for all the wrong reasons. And I literally felt that time ticking away, but it made me only work. So I had zero relationships in my life. And of course, my health was horrible. And the irony is the business didn't do that well either. You're unbalanced. You're not healthy. And it was only, you know, really when I turned 40 on that I started looking at my own issues around, you know, self-worth and how I distract myself or short-term, you know, feel worthy to come there. But it's nice to hear that the values piece is critical in that.
Well, and during that period, how did you feel? I mean, did you feel disoriented? Did you feel disintegrated from the rest of your life? It sounds like you did. And so
depressed, suicidal, exhausted. I felt like every morning I would wake up and there was a lion chasing me that I had to get away from. I mean, that's how I felt for a decade.
Well, and see that's the interruption that, you know, in my coaching and consulting practice, because I see it in corporate environments as well from the top down. So that's the interruption that I want this work to be, for people to just stop long enough and really examine, like, and your feel that, and those are the practices. And again, just as an aside, we put together a PDF that we're sending out when people buy the book to help them have something alongside of the book itself. But we're saying, what are the thoughts, feelings, and emotions that you're having in specific context related to the book? So you can, as an individual, start to see, because all of those things are telling us something about what's working or not working. When I talk about radical abundance, then I'm saying it's like prosperity, I believe, is a place to come from, not a place to get to.
Yeah.
And so that means that I have a meaningful life of joy and prosperity, no matter what my circumstances are. There's a level of contentment that is not necessarily linked to, you know, all the toys that I have. And there's nothing wrong with having those toys. But one of the things that I talk about is the flow of money, because there is a reality that sometimes we have more than other times. And, you know, I've really learned on my journey, and my husband is really the one that taught me that premise, is, you know, sometimes you invest in things and they're always there for you for a great period of time. And then, like, we had the crash in 08.
Right.
And a lot of people, you know, had resources that kept them going through that, and some people didn't. But it's not always tied to the bank account or you know, what your watch says. Because, again, the interesting thing to me about time and money is they're both concrete and abstract at the same time, which is what adds to the complexity of how we maneuver our way through the use of them and the utilization of them each and every day.
So, Sharon, I've got another question from that was triggered by your answer and your talk about, I mean, I really took a note on this about, you know, the amount of money and time we invest in, say, our children is sending them signals, anyone in our life, but I was interested in children. And, you know, I'm 50 years old, so I grew up in the 70s and, you know, my parents both worked and, you know, I shake my head at kind of the free range that me and my sisters had from early in the morning, you know, to into the evening. And I even read an article recently where the writer joked about the 70s as this, I guess this is a common thing. She said, you know, growing up in the 70s, kids were like one level up from the family dog. It was like, hey, go out and play. Don't slam the door and come in when the street lights go on and don't slam the door. So I guess I wasn't the only one. But now we're in a day where you hear people saying, oh, there's dangers with helicopter parents always hovering, never letting their kids, you know, be alone or take risks, that we're spoiling our children, buying them sneakers and iPhones and all this stuff. So is it a spectrum, or what are you thinking about this, you know, two ends of parenting going on?
Well, yeah, and I think it depends on the family system. But I was a helicopter parent, and so I totally get that. And I think we have overdone a lot of that. I see it, you know, with a lot of the younger families. But I think it's to me, it's more about the quality of time than even the quantity. So one of the things that I've been kind of on my pedestal about, because I'm just noticing it so much now, and it's not to make anybody wrong, but maybe just to have people ask themselves the question, is I'll see like parents out with their young children, maybe at breakfast, and maybe it's, you know, dad has the kids for the weekend or whatever reason, he's there by himself. And the whole time through breakfast, he's on his phone and the kids are just sitting there bored, you know, kind of playing with their food.
Right.
And I see this so much, and it's just kind of scary to me, because I feel like, you know, to me, mealtime was always a time where we sat at the table and we had conversations. I was kind of leave it to Beaver about that. You know, we just kind of, that was the deal for our family. And I just feel like maybe we're missing something there. Like we're doing so many pictures of our kids and putting them on Facebook, but are we really spending time talking with them? So, you know, again, every family's different. I don't know that we can say which is right or wrong. You never really know till you get to live it and you see how they turned out, you know. But it's again, just ask yourself the question, you know, am I having meaningful moments? Am I creating memories with the people that I care about? I mean, do I take the time in my business to listen to what my staff or employees are saying, or am I just shouting tasks at them all day? I had someone in a company I was in the other day, for instance, that said, I've been here for three years and I'm on the same floor with the CEO and he's never said more than two words to me.
Wow.
And it's not a big, you know, office, that floor. I mean, it's a big company, but where she is in the spectrum of the, you know, she's right there. And that's kind of sad, I think, you know, that a CEO could be buzzing through the office and not even cognizant of a young woman that really is a very significant leader in the organization.
Yeah, and this comes up over and over again, and executive coaches tell me this is a common complaint, that the, you know, the CEO or the leader of the organization, she zips on by and never says hello, never makes eye contact. And, you know, my message when I get a chance to speak with leaders, because again, I think I used to be one of those people back in my, you know, in my 20s, maybe even early 30s, and it wasn't that I was intentionally being rude or trying to be rude or that I didn't care about you. I was so type A achievement oriented director. I'm thinking about my to-do list. I'm rushing back for a phone call. And I'm, you know, telling these leaders, like, listen, you need to be mindful. You need to be present. You know, relationships matter. And hopefully people are going to get that message. But with the smartphones in the hands, I think it's worse than ever before.
Well, it is, and I'm guilty of it. I mean, I love my phone. I'm, you know, and they're designed, you know, to,
oh, yeah,
to keep responding. But to your point, when we look at the stages that I alluded to earlier, expert versus achiever, there's huge differences between those stages. And one that I could offer you is the difference between efficiency. The expert will focus more on being efficient and be more task-oriented by nature, which is great if you're a technician in a company. But I work with a lot of CEOs, for instance, who fall into that stage. And so efficiency rules over the achiever mindset, which would focus more on effectiveness. And so those that tend to fall into that stage of development, effectiveness for them often looks more relational, and they're more about developing. You know, I always say leadership is about developing and influencing people. And so that's just an important component. And if I'm only task-oriented all the time, I'm going to miss the opportunity to have those relationships such that I create different results, you know, between me and the individual, but even for the company overall. That's where people, I think, get disengaged and you know, the morale starts dropping because they don't feel valued or they don't feel a part of the bigger picture.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. So Sharon, before we go, I always like to challenge our listeners to become 1% better every single day. So I'm hoping you'll challenge us. Like, what's one specific thing that you can ask us to do today to make us a little bit, you know, better or to get us further along on our journey?
Well, one of the things that I do with my clients is I have them take a sheet of paper and write down two sheets, actually. What do you believe about time? And just do a stream of consciousness writing and see what comes up. And what do you believe about money? And you might be surprised how that, you know, indicates a lot of paradigms that you maybe aren't aware of. And then, of course, you know, in the book, we go a little bit deeper in terms of, you know, what were the childhood stories you heard? And there's a lot of different practices, as I said, related to each of the chapters. But, you know, start with that and just do a page, just, you know, or on your computer, just type a page. What do you believe? Because that belief around those two constructs is in some way impacting how you lead and run your businesses and what you value.
That's great. What free write, what do you believe? And then start to think about where did those beliefs come from? So Sharon, you had given one link, which I want you to give again. Tell our listeners how they can find out more about you, your company, and that inventory you mentioned.
Yes, I'm, of course, on all the social media platforms, obviously. It's SharonSpano.com. And then we have a microsite, and they're both linked together, the TimeMoneyBook.com. All the resources are on there. And if they, they could do the timemoneybook.com/leadx for you. So we know they came from you and vice versa, but there's resources on there and there's some bonuses, you know, for the book. And we've taken all the appendices and we put them into larger PDFs so they can have them. And again, the practices as well. So lots of good stuff.
Sharon, I always appreciate it when our guests have, you know, valuable resources like that for the show. And LeadX family, I'm going to go take that inventory and continue on with my journey. I was fascinated by the book and want to get in more deeply into these critical issues around, you know, our views on time and money. Sharon, thank you again for coming on to the LeadX show.
Thank you so much for having me, Kevin. I appreciate your passion and I loved your questions. It was a joy to be here.
It was a lot of fun. Thanks. LeadX family, don't forget, you can get links and notes from this interview over at leadx.org. And you can also download our free ebook, Richard Branson's 7 Secrets to Leadership, at leadx.org/Branson. And if you want to get more LeadX in your everyday life, just follow us at LeadX Life on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. That's one word, LeadX Life. And if you've ever gotten even just one good idea from a LeadX show, do me a huge favor. It takes less than a minute. And just subscribe to the show on iTunes and leave a quick rating. Just go to leadx.org/subscribe. Until next time, friends, remember, leadership is about influence, which means we are all leaders. Whether you're a salesperson or a soldier, an entrepreneur or an executive, a coach or a counselor, you are leading all of the time. You positively influence with your behavior, and you influence negatively when you're a bystander. How will you lead today?